And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy here. All right, they're back on the field. It's Thursday. We're closer to the game now.
Monday Night Football. We got to wait through the entire weekend of action before we get to the Bills. Then we have to wait all day Monday.
This is, yeah, it's reminded me a little bit now for the first.
I have zero patience when we're playing on Monday Night Football.
Because I was out of town for like 3 weekends or 2 weeks.
Yes, we remember right, vividly.
So, only now does it feel a little bit more like 2020 when you just can't wait for the next game. You know,
because of the wins they've stacked up here.
Week one stunk. Had to get over that one. So week two wasn't the same. And then 3, 4, and 5.
Week two was pretty good. Anytime you shut out the Dolphins and just wax them in their place,
that was good.
That's pretty tasty.
It was good. But anyway, but now it's getting to the point where it's kind of like 2020 because I was doing the games on radio. You know, last year, right? And so it was. I was like one of the few people who was watching these home games
in the stadium
right there and. So it's I'm kind of getting back into that mindset of, oof, man, when's the next game? Come on. Going back and watching these games.
It'll be hard.
I was watching Tennessee game, Tennessee-Jacksonville this morning a little bit. It's fun. It's a fun season. It's been a fun couple of seasons now.
And there was good news on the injury front as Matt Milano returns to practice today after missing last week's game. With the hamstring injury, and coach where he left it is very much in a day-to-day scenario. He said, we'll see how he does today and take it from there, which is probably the best way to go. Hamstrings are tricky. And although he was asked, Steve, you've got the bye next week. Is there a temptation to sit him again this week? Because that would give him the equivalent of 3 full weeks before he plays again to get that hamstring right. And coach did say he's aware that that is out there. But it sounds like this is something where they're going to see how he comes through the week and then probably just make a decision at the end of the week. Yes, you're ready. Go get him. Or, you know what? Let's just put a cork in this for now, and we'll see you in week 8 after the bye.
He didn't say he was limited. He said he's going
to
practice.
Well, yes, and we'll have to see what he's listed as when the injury report comes out later today.
I don't do this very much, and I think it's crazy to do it, but I'm going to do it anyway because, you know.
Because you're a wild man.
He didn't really sound hopeful when he said he was going to go out and practice. You know,
oh, you didn't coach get didn't, that sense?
I didn't get a sense that he was like, we're going
to
see how he does.
I think he tries to flatline it.
Right.
So that he doesn't give anybody an indication like I'm overly optimistic or I'm very pessimistic.
Yes.
He just tries to stay today, right here in the middle.
Today I got the pessimistic side of
it. You did?
Yeah,
okay.
I did.
He's
going to be out there. We're going to see how it goes. And I don't know whether that is like nonchalanting. Yeah, he's 100%. He probably could have gone this last week if we'd wanted to push it.
Yeah.
Or but then asking if he's, you know, are you tempted to keep him out? The thing is this, the only time that becomes an issue is if he gets 100% late in the week. Like he's not 100% today, but in two days.
He's tracking that way.
He is 100%. Then it's like, can he practice? Can he get ready to play? Is he going to be good? Or is it going to be just a nip and tuck thing where you think he could be? Because, I mean, that's when you get into this scenario of, you know, dragging it along.
Well, I think it's largely predicated on what was the severity of the hamstring injury. Is it a grade 1 strain where it's just wise to keep him out a week so it doesn't get any worse? Because he had one of those scenarios last year.
It goes deeper.
Week 1, he had a hamstring injury, missed week 2.
It goes deeper than just saying he can play, he's ready 100%, and he's not. Because not only physically, he's 100%, he can go. Well, he hasn't practiced for 2 weeks, right? He's not prepared to play. He's not in the game plan. He hasn't taken reps. It's been a long time since he's been on the field. That means something. So physically he may be ready, but he's not prepared. You know what I'm saying? If he can be prepared and 100%, then he's in. Forget about the bye week. Nobody cares. If he's physically 100% ready to go, probably Matt Milano at 100% physically without a week of practice is as good as you need him to be out there. You know what I'm saying? Because he's a three-year guy in this system, four-year guy in the system. So he'll know what he's doing. But that's the only gray area there is, because if he's not 100% or if he's not – yeah, if he's not 100%, he doesn't play, period. But if he is, yeah, I think he'd get him out there. I don't care about the bye week or, you know, taking an extra week off, being safe. No, if he's ready, he's ready. Seems simple.
Yeah, And it's all – I think it's all going to be based on what was the severity of the injury in the first place, and that will largely determine how much he practices today, how he makes his way through the week, and then ultimately whether he plays or not on Monday night. And he gets the benefit of an extra day as well with the game being Monday night. So,
right.
You know, there are all these things that at least seem to be working in his favor. So there's that. We'll have the injury report out today, hopefully before we're off the air at 3, and we'll pass that along to you as soon as we get it. Other news and notes, it looks like Tua is back practicing for the first time since week 2 when he was injured on the hit by A.J. Epenesa. So trending towards being in the lineup certainly by the time the Bills play him post-bye. They are the first game out of the bye in week 8. So all indications, provided he doesn't get re-injured, are that he'll probably be the starting quarterback against the Bills in week 8. And with the time he has missed, Steve, he is looking at a 9-game job audition for the future, because the Dolphins have to be saying, make the most of these 9 games, guy. Prove to me that you are the guy. Otherwise, we're back in the draft looking again. And if he's horrible, I wonder what the job security of one Brian Flores is.
It puts Bills fans in a weird predicament a little bit. Because a lot of Bills fans have spent the last 2 years, certainly two of the last 4 years, defending their quarterback to people who were saying he's not the guy. He's never going to be the guy, right? Now, last year, obviously, he proved he was, and now we're moving along with that. But, that, you know, Bills fans know what it's like to have a young quarterback that everybody's down on and saying, you guys got the wrong guy, and they're laughing at you. That's where the Dolphin fans are now. So the Bills fans kind of, if you're any kind of person with any kind of memory, you realize it's not all that cool to have people bagging on your young quarterback, give him a chance to be successful. But that's where you and I have been. We haven't liked him from the beginning.
Yeah.
And whether we're right or wrong kind of is irrelevant to Dolphin fans. They don't care what we think.
Right.
But we were in their spot for 2 years with Josh.
Yeah.
Believing in our heart that he was.
Yeah. There's a few differences there.
Oh.
Just a few.
Those are the differences you and I saw from the beginning, and we still maintain.
Josh is 6'5", 238 pounds, with a rocket arm and the ability to run like a deer.
He's toolsy.
And Tua is 6 foot, barely 200 pounds, average arm, not super mobile, coming off a major injury in college, and is a system quarterback.
Well, okay, yeah. But here's the thing. But now the Dolphins are in the exact same spot the Bills are. And as Bills fans, secretly, maybe not so secretly, you're hoping that they hang on to that guy because you know he's not the guy.
Yeah. They'll dwell in mediocrity forever.
Hang on to him. Don't waste that pick.
You can't give up on him.
He needs just a couple things before he gets it right, and you're going to be fine with him. That's where Bills fans are for the Dolphins, because as long as they've got that guy and we've got this guy, we win.
Maybe we should start a tie yourself to Tua campaign.
Tua's the guy.
Tie to Tua.
Buffalo Bills fans are harping that Tua is a fantastic quarterback.
They're terrified
of Tua. I can't believe that the Dolphins would even consider getting rid of him or moving on from
Tua
at this early point of his career.
Absolutely terrified of that guy.
Right. So it's a weird place, because Bills, you gotta look yourself in the eye as a Bills fan saying, yeah, I was there. We were there, man. I get it.
Yeah.
You know?
Bucks Eagles tonight. Looks like Brady is going to play. Gronkowski and one of their top two linebackers, Lavonte David, out of the lineup. So they'll be a little bit shorthanded there. I don't know that it's going to make a tremendous difference in the outcome. It's pretty crazy when you think Tampa Bay, oh, no, they don't have Gronk. Oh, but they have Cameron Brate and O.J. Howard. What? Like, they got to be one of the deepest teams at the tight end position I've ever seen.
Yeah, they're
– That's going to shape up to be a pretty dang good game come December.
Yeah, and there, to me, there was never a doubt Tom Brady was going to play, thumb or not. From the way he handled the first question about it when he walked into his press conference this week and said, and he had his thumb wrapped, and they asked him about it. He says, I'm going to be fine. I think it's just baggage that every football player deals with. Certainly yeah. It's on his throwing hand and all that, but if it was an issue, we would have heard more about it now.
Right.
And he would have been forced to be a bigger part of their injury report. You'd be hearing about it if it was. I think it's a hangnail, and he's going to move on. No, it's not a hangnail, but I'm saying that's kind of the severity of it. He's going to play through it.
We have a full show for you today, fully loaded here, as in about 20 minutes or so, we will have ESPN's Field Yates with us. We'll have him comment on Bills Chiefs from Sunday night, look ahead to Bills Titans on Monday night, and he's also going to give us his ultimate fantasy lineup presented by FanDuel. In about 20 minutes' time, so stay tuned for that, especially if you're a fantasy player in need of some help or you play fantasy in the way Field puts together his lineup with a cap, which can always be challenging from week to week, so stay tuned for that. Second hour of the show, I'd say about 50 minutes from now, we'll have ESPN Titans beat reporter Teron Davenport joining us. He's really plugged into the Titans. So we'll get his thoughts as to what the heck's going on down there. They just waxed the Jaguars pretty good, but the Jaguars are a winless team. And I know the Bills have had an easy schedule, but that's a game that the Titans are expected to win. And they did, 37-16, won it pretty handily. But there are a few chinks in the armor down there that I'm sure Steve and I will ask him about, so we'll see where things stand there. And then final half hour of the show, we hope to have Taron Johnson, who is part of a new Beyond Blue and Red featured piece on BuffaloBills.com, the Bills YouTube channel, and other outlets, media outlets for the Bills, basically called Going the Distance, which is a playoff, his 101-yard interception return in the divisional playoff against Baltimore that broke the game completely open. So we look forward to talking to Taron about that. Get some, maybe some behind-the-scenes details on the whole filming of that, because they kind of had him relive the interception return on the field. He's walking around with a football and stuff. So kind of neat the way they did that. So want to talk to him about that and how it all came down and how he's kicking butt this season. I mean, he's playing really well. And also, oh, by the way, just got a new bag of money. Contract extension.
Good for him. And I'll say this, too. I had no idea, and most of us, we had no idea Taron Johnson was even in the process of renegotiating or getting a new deal.
We knew he was in the last year of his rookie deal.
We knew it was, yeah. We knew he might go away after the season. But I'll say this, during the first couple of weeks of the season before he signed the deal, I noticed him making plays. He was all over the field. He had a pick that was called back against the Washington football team. The next play, he was right in the middle of another almost interception. He had also done a couple of things in the first couple of weeks of the season. He's just showing up everywhere.
Well, he had the forced fumble on the fourth down go-for-it play by the Dolphins in week two. Milano hops on the fumble there. He had the hit, the jar of the ball loose.
He was really, really playing well right before he signed the contract.
Even in the Pittsburgh game in the opener, Pittsburgh's in the red zone there. He's got Eric Ebron, 6'5", tight end, and he makes the pass break up at the goal line in the end zone at the tunnel end. I mean, that might have been one of the best pass breakups I've seen. For a 5'10 guy on a 6'5 tight end, he outleaps him for the ball to knock it away.
Did a nice job. So he's been playing at a high level. And, you know, when you see that and you talk, the contract he signed to me seems, wow, that's a contract the Bills can live with.
Yeah.
And certainly Taron can live with it as well. It's going to change his life probably and for the better, hopefully. And it's just good to see a guy who was really showing up, you know, get rewarded for it. And that's been one of the most – it seems simple when you say it the way we say it on this show. But, man, when guys work hard and play well, they get rewarded in this organization.
Yeah.
One way or another. In this case, we're talking about a new contract. But in other cases, you're talking about practice squad guys who all of a sudden, I wonder why, you know, why is Duke Johnson – elevated this week. He's actually on the field. You find out it's because he was playing great, practicing great, working hard, doing everything better. And he showed up, and they rewarded him with a game. Then you see it's the same thing with other guys. Why is this offensive lineman getting reps this week? Well, because he's been playing, you know, all that stuff. It's really, it sounds simple, but so many teams don't spend the energy or invest in those rewards because they think it'll somehow upset the apple cart if a guy who's an established player has to sit down for a minute while this other guy who's been working hard and doing things gets a reward. They think somehow it's going to throw a big upheaval in the locker room, and actually just the opposite is the case. Yeah. It motivates everybody in the locker room. And it has been one of the things about this organization that I think has aided in its ascension is the fact that every guy on a 53-man roster and all the guys on the practice squad feel like the club is engaged with them personally. And I can't say enough about how hard that is to accomplish. And yet, you know, here we are.
Yeah.
It has been one of the things that has set this organization apart and one of the reasons they've got a program. It doesn't seem like anybody's duplicating.
Right. And, you know, we think about some of the places where the Bills stubbed their toe last season on a 14-3 campaign in the regular season. One of those places was where they'll be returning here on Monday night at Tennessee, Nissan Stadium, prime time. And last year's game in week 5 was a complete scheduling debacle. Oof. As we all know. Tennessee had an outbreak with COVID. Upwards of 19, 20 players, coaches. They basically got isolated, put on an island. A game with Pittsburgh got moved to Pittsburgh's bye week. And then the following week, the Bills got jerked around as to who they were playing, when they were playing, the order in which they were playing the Titans and the Chiefs. And then they got about 48 hours notice that they're playing the Titans on a Tuesday in Nashville. Go get on a plane and get down there. Let's just say it did not leave a savory taste in the mouth of any of the players, let alone the coaches. And they're not going to say anything about it this week. But I'm telling you right now, the gas pedal is going to be pushed to the floor from the moment that ball is kicked off at 8:15 on Monday night.
Yeah.
So that's why we are asking you, because I'm curious, and Steve kind of came up with this question, which I think is a good one. How will the 2021 Bills versus Titans matchup be different than last year's? What is going to be different about the game, the elements surrounding the game, maybe even your emotions going into the game based on what happened last year? Let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, or you can hit us up on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live.
I'll say this, and I'll give Sal Capaccio some credit for this. He came up with this yesterday. I didn't realize this, but last year when they went down there, yet we asked, and the question is, what's going to be different this year? Listen to the lineup of the Bills' defense from a year ago. It was Trent Murphy, Ed Oliver, Harrison Phillips, Jerry Hughes up front. You can bet three of those guys are going to be different. Greg, two of those guys anyway.
Yeah, Trent Murphy. Greg Rousseau, star.
Yeah, Greg Rousseau, star instead of Harrison Phillips. Jerry Hughes might be out there, but it's going to be Rousseau and those guys. Then it's going to be Tremaine Edmonds, of course. Then Terrell Dodson was in there last year. Cam Lewis was out there last year. And Dean Marlowe was out there, along with Josh Norman. And, of course, Poirier and Hyde. A lot of different faces this year than last year on the defensive side of the football. And we still don't know if Milano's going to be out there, but it's certainly a possibility. But you got Trent Murphy, Harrison Phillips, Terrell Dodson, Cam Lewis, and Dean Marlowe. Five guys, and Josh Norman, six out of the 11 guys are going to be absolutely different than they were a year ago when they played on a Tuesday night.
That's pretty remarkable, considering who they were without for that game. I don't know. I think it – I'm not saying that the Titans aren't going to give them a game. I think they will.
Absolutely.
I maintain that the Titans are one of the most mentally tough teams that I think exists in this league right now. When that team looks like they're dead and buried, they just keep grinding. I just think it's a reflection of their coach, Vrabel, who was, you know, a blue-collar linebacker type. So I expect them to battle for 60 minutes. But I don't know. There's something in the back of my head that just thinks what the Bills are going to be able to put on the field in all three phases is just simply going to be overwhelming. Got to take care of the football, as we know, but I don't know. I know we had Kyle Brandt on earlier this week, Steve, and he picked the Bills 21-20. So he's expecting a nail biter, and we never know how these games are going to go.
Yeah, I don't either. Their offense is a handful because of Derrick Henry and their ability to, for Ryan Tannehill to move. He's a good athlete, and he can deliver the football. And they've got some guys to catch it. The Bills' offense hasn't played its best, I don't think, best football yet this season, but they've got a big engine. The Bills' offense does as well. It's going to come down to how many plays the Titan defense can make against the Buffalo Bills and what their plan's going to be. Can they keep them off the field? Can they get them off the field? Can the Bills convert third downs to stay viable in it? And so I think there's a lot of question marks about this game because the Tennessee Titans are good enough, as you said, physically and mentally tough enough to hang in there with a really good team, which the Bills are. But I think, except for the Chiefs, I don't think the Chiefs played very well on Monday night or Sunday night.
They didn't.
If the Titans play well, it will be the toughest game the Bills have faced yet this season. Now the Bills got beat. You can say, well, they got beat by this, but the Bills didn't play well.
Yeah.
And I'd love, you know, the Steelers game. That was a team that I don't think is as talented as this Tennessee team. So you're going to get a better performance from them. It's going to be a bigger challenge. I think I want to get into is I'm thinking this Tennessee game may be the biggest challenge yet for the Bills.
Yeah.
We had that specter of the Chiefs and all that stuff that they bring. You think, wow, there's nobody can go into Kansas City and win. They beat us by 2 touchdowns. It was a huge game, no question about it. But in hindsight, their defense stinks.
Yeah.
And that was the difference. This Tennessee team doesn't stink in any aspect of it. Now, they may not be as talented as other teams, but they don't play bad, usually.
Now, there's an interesting development with regard to their kicking game. Their punter, Brett Kern, went on the COVID list this week. Now, there's no word as to whether or not he'll be back in time for the game. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. We'll try to get an update from Teron Davenport when we talk to him on what the expectation is there. And with an extra day to get to Monday night, maybe he's out of the protocols by then and available to play on Monday night. The Titans are last in the league in punt coverage. Roll in the fact that they may not have their punter. I mean, they might be going for it on fourth down anytime they're on the plus side of the field.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. It might change their tactics a little bit with a backup punter.
I mean, you can't cover the punt to begin with. Then you got to go with a backup punter. Ooh.
Right. Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how they're handling that down there and who they bring in. Certainly, they can't go out there without a punter. But even with Kern in there, they haven't been very effective. Well, it's interesting to see. Certainly, the Bills have got to think they've got a leg up, but you still got to play well. You got to figure out why they stink, see if they can fix it or if they're going to fix it or what you would do to fix it, and then tactically mesh your plan with that.
Yeah.
And we'll see what the Bills can do, but it's certainly something the Titans are concerned about.
Yeah, no question about it. How will the 2021 Bills versus Titans matchup on Monday night be different than last year's 42-16 loss? We go to the tweet sheet, which is brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving provider of the Buffalo Bills. And Jack says, we'll have Trey White, a healthy Edmonds, hopefully Milano, and a better D-line to contain Tannehill. Plus, a full complement of healthy wide receivers and running backs to attack a porous Tennessee defense. Also, the Titans won't have the COVID woe-is-us chip. Bills will want revenge for those shenanigans. How much of an emotional boost will all of that garbage from last year provide, if anything?
A little bit.
Not a lot.
I knew going into last year's game, the Bills had
no chance.
No shot
at
that. I've seen that kind of scenario play out at other levels of football and even in the pros where one team, you can't prepare, something happens.
You've completely disrupted the schedule.
Disrupted their schedule.
And the routine.
Their routine's done. And now the whole league and every fan of every other team in the league was piling on Tennessee like they were some sort of idiot bunch of fools who had disregarded the protocols and had cheated and done all this stuff. They were getting hammered in the media and public in the court of public opinion. So they had hunkered down, had this bunker mentality, and indeed, in a real sense, it was them against everybody else. And when they could finally get on the field after like one day of practice, they had nobody had any expectations of them to be able to play. Nobody had any expectations or any – they had every excuse in the book. They had nothing to worry about, nothing to fear. They were supposed to lose the game. and they could cut loose and play. Meanwhile, the Bills were just the opposite of that, where the Tennessee Titans were playing and playing that game as though they had been reprieved off death row, just like, woo! It's like a free weekend in Vegas, and you don't have to pay the marker.
Yeah.
Right? Let's just go. That's a great way to play. A great way to play. And the Bills, on the other hand, were doing just the opposite of that. They were being forced to do something nobody wanted any part of.
Yeah. Tiffany on the tweet sheet says, Rousseau and company destroying the Titans O-line the entire game. It's going to be a long day for the Titans. Ryan Tannehill right now is the most sacked quarterback in football, which is saying something knowing all the rookie quarterbacks that are playing right now. 20 times in 202 dropbacks. That's 10% of the time he's getting dropped for a sack. He's lost 150 yards on 20 sacks.
Yeah, that's kind of hidden yardage, too, sometimes. Yee. But I think some of that is a little bit the way they run their offense.
Well, a lot of play action.
Exactly. A lot of play action. So when guys dive in to stop the run, you know.
You're kind of already halfway there.
You're halfway there, and, you know, they get there. They get home doing that. And I think when they try to come off the ball as an offensive line and show run, it's easier to slip that block when the guy's coming at you, when the offensive lineman's shooting out to come at, as a run play, than it is when he's backing up and you got to kind of find a way to get around him. So I think some of that leaves him vulnerable back there. So if that first read isn't there and the ball's not out on time, somebody's there. And I think that may be part of what happens to Tennessee, but that can't be all of it.
Yeah. There are problems there,
I think so.
All right, we have to take a break here, but when we return, it'll be the ultimate fantasy lineup presented by one ESPN's Field Yates. He comes in for his weekly segment. We'll also ask him about Bills Titans on Monday night, so stay where you are. We're back in a moment. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back. One Bills Live is the show. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And it is that time of the week where we welcome in ESPN NFL insider and fantasy football expert, also host of the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. It is the one and only Field Yates joining us here. Field, how you doing first? And then second, give us your biggest takeaway from the Sunday night duel between the Kansas City Chiefs and Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, so first of all, great to be on with you guys. I'm doing well. It's a beautiful day here. I'm down in Connecticut. I can imagine it's a nice day up there in Western New York as well. It's about 75 degrees. Yep. We don't have too many days like this in October, so we count the blessings when we do. My big takeaway from Sunday night is we all know that the Bills have players. I mean, the roster is one of the best in football. Brandon Bean's done an incredible job. I mean, he's one of the best GMs in football. We've talked about that many times over. We could probably talk about it every time I come on the show. We would not get sick of it. But it's not just the players now. It's the plan, too. And I'm not saying the Bills haven't had plans in the past. They've been extremely well coached as well. That's why I think there's a case for them as the clear favorites right now in the NFL. But the plan on Sunday night was remarkable, both sides of the ball. You know, the Chiefs are struggling defensively. There's no mystery around that. The Chiefs are undermanned, and I'm not sure schematically they're dialing up the right calls right now on defense, but on offense they're very good. What we saw the Bills do on Sunday was go in with a plan, remain committed to the plan, and execute the plan. And the plan was pretty clear to me. I think the numbers sort of bore it out as well. The Bills blitzed once on Sunday night. Patrick Mahomes dropped back over 60 times. The idea is simple. The best way you have a chance to at least contain that Chiefs offense is to rush four at maximum, play coverage, and limit big plays. And the Chiefs had just two plays of 20-plus yards last week, and one of them was a scramble from Patrick Mahomes, which you live with every Sunday or every Monday or Thursday, whenever you're playing. So big opportunity for the Bills to capitalize. They sure did. The plan and the people are all aligning.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And it's sometimes when you get into a game with the Chiefs like that, it's hard to stay. And they talked about it a lot during the game, but to stay disciplined and not get flustered when a play does happen that hurts you. And certainly the Bills were able to keep the you know, the Chiefs off the board in that regard. So it may have been a little easier to stay patient defensively. But, man, oh, man, you're right. Tip your hat to the coaching staff for staying disciplined and going with the plan and trusting it. This week, as we move on, we're already at week six.
Amazing.
It's amazing how fast this season slips by. I mean, goodness. But some of these guys, some things are happening around the league, and the AFC in particular is stacked to the gills with great young quarterbacks, and one of those young quarterbacks is at the top of your fantasy list this week.
That's right, Justin Herbert, who was awesome last week, and people have thought that the Browns might provide some resistance against him. It did not. And so if we look ahead to our week six lineup presented by FanDuel, we look at some of the players that are available. I think you have to consider Justin Herbert at $8,000 at quarterback. I'll remind people every single week that the idea is you take the player's price, you divide it by 1,000. So 8,000 divided by 1,000 is obviously 8. Multiply that number by 3. That gets you to 24. That's how many points you're looking for from that player to consider it a good return on investment. Well, Justin Herbert this year is averaging over 25 fantasy points per game. And this Ravens team, I think, is a little bit tricky because they're 4-1, and the old Bill Parcells adage is notable. You are what your record says you are. But Marcus Peters, out for the year. They've been dealing with some injuries on defense and, frankly, some inconsistent play that I don't know that moving the football is going to be the issue for the Chargers on Sunday in a great, great matchup. If anything, what most concerns you is just the fact that they have to stop Lamar Jackson. Well, the good news is if they can't stop Lamar Jackson, that just means more opportunities for Justin Herbert to throw and score points. And Justin Herbert is doing things not just on schedule, but off schedule. And we see it with Josh. We see it with Patrick Mahomes. We see it with a few of the other best quarterbacks in the NFL right now that – it's one thing to have a plan, but when that plan falls apart and the quarterback can beat you in a litany of ways, that's where defensive coordinators kind of take their hands and throw them up in the air and just say, I'm not sure what I can do anymore. So Justin Herbert's been awesome. Been really fun to watch the Chargers win close games for a change, something they have not done in the past. They've found ways to undo their own efforts. So far this season, they have not.
Talking to ESPN NFL insider fantasy football expert Field Yates, who's given us his ultimate fantasy lineup presented by FanDuel. Make every moment more. The running backs, you go with what we tend to see, Field, this time of year. Some guys get nicked up. You're looking for a backup if you're playing weekly fantasy. If you're playing daily fantasy, you're looking to take advantage of an opportunity for a guy that might be undervalued because he hasn't been in the lineup prior to the week he's scheduled to start in place of somebody. You took that route with one of your running back decisions here.
That's right, and that's Darrell Williams of the Chiefs, who's expected to fill in for Clyde Edwards-Helaire as the starting running back for Kansas City. And you guys saw him a bit last Sunday night. He'd play for Kansas City in the third quarter and fourth quarter when CEH was not available. And he's a pretty good player. He is a very capable pass catcher. And one of the big concerns with Clyde Edwards-Helaire in fantasy is that the Chiefs have been so reticent to use him as a goal line runner. Well, they're not nearly as reticent to use Darrell Williams as a goal line runner. As a matter of fact, got 4 carries inside the 10-yard line this year, 2 of which have gone for touchdowns. Clyde Edwards-Helaire has 1 of those carries. It did not go for a touchdown. So he's a better bet to be a finisher for Kansas City. Good in the running game, good in the passing game, and the opportunity is ripe right now, guys. The Chiefs are obviously mad after how they got completely dominated last week. And they play a defense that I can't imagine what it would be like if you guys were doing one football team live every day, covering the Washington football team defense, because the way they're playing right now makes you, I mean, it just would be completely, you can't even make sense of it. It's supposed to be the most talented defense or one of them on paper in the NFL, and they've been one of the worst. So the matchup is great here for Darrell Williams as well.
And along with your quarterback, Justin Herbert, the other running back is his running mate, Austin Eckler. Both those guys going into Baltimore this week.
That's right. Austin Eckler, who's been great this year. If we were talking about season-long fantasy, there's a case for him as the first, second, third best player. He's just been awesome for Los Angeles in every way, shape, or form. You know, in FanDuel scoring, you're always looking for guys that have an opportunity to catch a bunch of passes. PPR scoring is very valuable, and Austin Eckler is about as talented as it gets out of the backfield. especially amongst the healthy running backs right now, as Christian McCaffrey is still banged up. And as a matter of fact, just seconds before we started this conversation, we learned that Christian McCaffrey was not available during the media portion of the Panthers practice today. So you've got all these notable names at running back banged up. Meanwhile, Austin Eckler keeps chugging along. He's been great for the Chargers so far this season. He's priced at $8,400 for this week. It's a big number, but I'm okay with it, because remember that Ravens run game, that Ravens defense last week had really no answers for the Colts running game, both on the ground and also through the air, as Jonathan Taylor had a 70-plus yard receiving touchdown early in the game. It kind of got things rolling for Indy, and a lead they obviously eventually squandered.
All right, so receiver is where you've often spent a lot of your money. No different here, at least with two of your three choices.
Yeah, let's spend big. Let's go to Tiffany's for some shopping. It's, you know, it's almost holiday season. You want to buy your significant other something nice. How about Tyreek Hill and Davante Adams in two of your three receiver spots? So Tyreek Hill is priced at $8,700. Davante Adams just behind him at $8,500. I got to be honest with you guys. I talked about how the Chiefs are going to be frustrated after last week. This opportunity on Sunday against the Washington football team reminds me of what happened to them after they lost their second game of the season and then played the – it was 2 weeks ago they played the Eagles. And they just decimated that Eagles secondary. Tyreek Hill had three touchdowns, nearly 200 receiving yards. I could see him having just a clinic day on Sunday against a Washington football team defense that, again, they're not doing anything well right now. Nothing whatsoever. And then for the Bears and Packers game, Davante Adams, I mean, I don't know who can slow Davante Adams down. More receiving yards than any player in the NFL since the start of last season. Most receiving yards in the NFL this season alone. Coming off of just a monster effort against the Bengals. He and Aaron Rodgers are obviously in lockstep. They have been for close to a decade now. This Bears defense has some good defensive players. Jalen Johnson, their second-year cornerback out of Utah, is a good player. But there's some times where you just sort of ignore the matchup because the offensive talent's just that unique. And I think Davante Adams checks that box right now.
And then, of course, your last receiver is a guy that you went more of an economic move. And a nice one, too, I think, Kadarius Toney, who flashed last week for the Giants against the Cowboys. Do you think he's coming on and living up to his first-round status? It seems like he really did last week.
Those past 2 weeks have been everything the Giants could have hoped for and more. If you watched Florida football last year, you saw him. He was everywhere. I mean, just I compared him to like watching someone playing a game of Frogger, right? You just can't keep up with him. You can't find a way to get your hands on him. And over the past 2 weeks, he's actually second in the NFL in receiving yards behind only Davante Adams. What we have to figure out is that the past 2 weeks, the Giants have been without both Sterling Shepard and Darius Slayton. Those players could be back this week. If that's the case, do they shy away from utilizing Kadarius Toney as much as they have? The counterpoint to that would be, hey, Kadarius Toney's been one of the best players on the field each of the past 2 weeks. How could you possibly not give him the football? It's not like he is, you know, some average, you know, been around the league for a while. He's just, you know, hot stretch. He's Kadarius Toney. He's a 20th overall pick for a reason. So Kadarius Toney at $6,000 is the upside play that I like right there, which for the Giants, hopefully they just continue to be consistent with their play calling. Over the past couple weeks, it's been red hot.
And then at tight end, are you hoping your choice here dips into the Dawson Knox success pool? Because based on, I mean, are you going purely based on who this guy is playing this week?
Yeah, seriously, right? I mean, Dawson's obviously been incredible for three straight weeks right now, scoring four touchdowns in that time. But Ricky Seals-Jones for the Washington football team is priced at just $5,000. And, you know, a tight end, if you're not spending big on a Travis Kelsey or a Darren Waller or Mark Andrews, what you have to find is a guy who actually has a legit role week in and week out. And Ricky Seals-Jones, since Logan Thomas went down, has been on the field for almost every single snap for Washington. He has been everywhere for them. And the production's not going to be monumental, but the Chiefs defense can't stop anybody right now. And if you're thinking there's a chance that Taylor Heinicke throws for 325 yards on Sunday, you know, it might mean that Terry McLaurin gets 100 or so, but not expecting Curtis Samuel. And Logan Thomas is on IR, so Ricky Seals-Jones stands to benefit the most for this football team.
And in your flex position from in a matchup against Las Vegas, you've got Tim Patrick.
Yeah, Tim Patrick, who I just think is one of the more underrated players in the NFL. I think that if he was playing somewhere else, he probably wouldn't be the team's fourth wide receiver when everybody is healthy. But he plays in Denver, where they've made some big investments in wide receivers over the past four drafts, really. But right now, it's just him and Cortland Sutton who are getting all the work. And this Raiders secondary has probably been better by the numbers than we maybe realize. That being said, I still think that Tim Patrick is just so reliable. He's playing a ton of snaps. He's got 123 straight targets without a drop, I should say. And I think that Teddy Bridgewater has been good enough this year to support two fantasy wide receivers week in and week out. Cortland Sutton has more upside. He actually leads the NFL in a stat we call air yards, which does not factor in just completions. It's throws which you're targeted. If you're 40 yards down the field and the ball is incomplete, they still count those air yards, which I know obviously you want to see those turn into completions, but it's also instructive to note that Cortland Sutton is running a ton of vertical patterns, which is great when he hits them, but they're also inefficient relative to some of the stuff that you're seeing from Tim Patrick, most of the short and intermediate game stuff. So I think that when you look at the types of targets that Tim Patrick is getting, they're too valuable to not enjoy week in and week out.
And then you wrap it up with Carolina on defense, and I'll dovetail off of that quickly. So after you kind of explain your reasoning there, just give us your thoughts on Monday night's matchup with Bills Titans too, their field.
Yeah, so the Panthers defense has been pretty solid so far this year, forcing a lot of turnovers, generating a lot of pressure, a lot of sacks. Play a Minnesota team on Sunday that, you know, certainly they were good for the first 3 weeks offensively, but you guys have probably watched enough and seen enough Kirk Cousins to know that it's a little bit of a yo-yo experience when you're watching him, right? Some weeks good, some weeks bad. Offensive line, some weeks good, some weeks bad. Dalvin Cook might be in the lineup, might be out of the lineup. So enough confidence in this Panthers defense to have them in my lineup. And then just quickly on Monday night, you know, this is one of those where I don't know that the Bills have, you know, they certainly wouldn't admit it themselves about like turning a corner. But I think at least in my mind, my feeling is that pretty much every game, especially at the upcoming schedule, like I say to myself, if the Bills do what they need to do, they win this game comfortably. And that's the case on Monday night against the Titans team that has the most dominant running back in football, obviously, in Derrick Henry, but notable injuries. AJ Brown at wide receiver has not been himself so far this year. Julio Jones has missed the past 2 weeks. Sounds like he has a chance to play on Monday night. They have not been explosive in the passing game so far this year. All the explosive plays have basically been stemming from the running game. And on defense, while they've got some players that have been improved, Harold Landry, an excellent pass rusher, generating a ton of pressures right now. They have vulnerabilities in the secondary. Wouldn't be surprised if Josh has one of his bigger days through the air so far this season.
Sounds good, Field. Great to catch up with you again. We will see you next week, man.
Thanks, Field.
Sounds good, guys. Take care. Enjoy the game Monday night.
All right, that's ESPN NFL insider and fantasy football expert Field Yates giving us his ultimate fantasy lineup presented by FanDuel. Make every moment more. We got to take a break. When we come back, more of your thoughts on the tweet sheet. As we've been asking you today, how will the 2021 Bills-Titans matchup be different than last year's? Hit us up on the tweet sheet, let us know, or give us a call. Back in a moment here on One Bills Live. All right, welcome back. It's One Bills Live. It's Thursday. It's Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you as we've been discussing with you. How will the 2021 Bills versus Titans matchup be different from last year's, which was a 42-16 defeat at the hands of the Titans in Nashville? JT says the game actually being played on the day it's supposed to be. And we know this time we are actually facing the Titans. Another thing that'll be different is we will get the W. Like Tasker said, I smell a 40 burger, maybe even a shutout. The king will be put in check. Go Bills. Now, I will say this, Steve. Derrick Henry has played the Bills three times in his career since he entered the league in 2016. He has never run for 80 yards or more in any one of those three meetings. They held him under 60 yards twice. 78 yards rushing is his high against the Bills.
Yeah, I don't care how many yards he runs for. I just hope they don't score points.
Okay.
You know, I mean, he's going to make some plays against you. He's just too good, and they're too good at what they do not to do. Now, they've held him in check, but 78 yards is a pretty good day.
It's not 100, but it's still a pretty good day. Average, I don't know how many yards it took him to get those either. You know, I don't know how many carries, yeah. But his yards per carry average is something that's really important.
Well, his yards per carry average in three games against the Bills, I will tell you, Steve, it's 3.92.
Yeah, it's not great. It's not horrible. It's almost 4 yards a carry.
It's down for him.
But it's down for him, yeah. We'll see. I still think this is a really good Tennessee offense, and it goes behind it. It all runs through him. He is an absolutely
he's a beast.
Dominating force. Just one of the all-time impressive running backs you'll ever see. You have guys that are maybe more fun to watch, Barry Sanders, Walter Payton. You can go back, Earl Campbell. You can go back and look at guys throughout the history. But that guy's unique.
Yeah.
He is massively big.
Somebody that big has no right outrunning defensive backs to the end zone. Yeah. That's what's nuts about him.
Right. And the thing about it, too, is and this was brought up as well. You think, okay, he had a gazillion carries 2 years ago. He had a gazillion carries last year, and now he's carrying it even more this year, and it doesn't seem like he doesn't even have a chip in his paint. You know? I mean, the guy is really a phenomenally gifted and able to recover week to week to get right back in the saddle and carry the ball again a number of times a game.
You watch some of his off-season training videos. Your eyes will pop right out of your head. Some of the stuff he's got hanging off his neck, doing push-ups with rubber bands. It's just stupid stuff.
Yeah.
We have to take a break. One more tweet, though, before we go, from Herb, who is already in a lather, Steve, and it's Thursday. In terms of what will be different this year between Bills Titans as opposed to last year, he said, simple. The Bills will go into Tennessee and punch them right in the mouth, 7 exclamation points. You got to calm Herb down. We don't want him to get over prepared here. He's going to be exhausted by the time we get to kickoff. Pace yourself,
for the
Herb.
Looking for the game.
All right, break time for us. When we come back, we will talk about those very Titans and what the Bills can expect on Monday night when we have ESPN Titans beat reporter Teron Davenport joining us. He'll be up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
All right, here we are. Hour number two. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you on a Thursday edition of One Bills Live. And it's time to talk Titans, and to do that with us now is ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, also host of the Talking with TD podcast, member of the PFWA. It is one Teron Davenport joining the show again as we are set to talk Titans. Teron, good to have you. Hope you're well. We're trying to figure out just what to expect from this Titans team. They had a lot of turnover on defense in the offseason, as we know. Julio Jones was a big name acquisition, but he's been out of the lineup. It doesn't look like the passing game has taken off the way they wanted it to kind of balance out the offense. What kind of team should we expect here on Monday night?
Yeah, I think it's really a team that's absolutely a work in progress, and they're working to get Julio Jones back in the lineup. A.J. Brown was just reinserted into the lineup. Both of those guys are struggling with hamstring issues. So you haven't really seen these guys all come together and be able to show what this offense is capable of. So that's kind of what you're looking at. I think it's really interesting just with Derrick Henry and what he's able to do running the football. He's actually ahead of his pace last year in which he got 2,000 yards. He's projecting over a 17-game season for 2,176. So what you're going to see is a whole lot of Derrick Henry and possibly if Julio Jones plays some sprinkled in passing plays, maybe some even deep shots.
What about the offensive line? Have they come together as well? I mean, they got some familiar faces in front of Ryan Tannehill. How have they evolved?
Yeah, really the only spot that was going to have a new starter was right tackle, and that's where David Quisenberry has come in and kind of settled in as the starter. However, there's so many injuries that left side is dealing with. You know, from center Ben Jones to the left, with Roger Saffold at left guard, Taylor Lewan at left tackle, one or two of these guys goes down, they go down almost every game, and then they work their way back in. So that is something to watch. Tyson Brilo, who was their reserve tackle, who would come in for Lawan when Lawan went down, he actually retired a couple of days ago. So now they're just kind of up in the flux. Their second-round pick, Dylan Radens, if an injury should occur, he's going to be rushed into duty, and we'll just have to see how he's able to pan out. He's worked so much at guard, both guard spots and tackle spots, so it'll be a bit of a challenge for the rookie if he's called upon.
What can be said about the fact that Ryan Tannehill is the most sacked quarterback in the league right now with 20 through five games? What do you attribute most of those situations to, having seen every snap?
Yeah, it's a balance of things. I won't dare put that all on the offensive line, right? Because there are times where guys are getting smoked up front. There are times where you see delayed blitzes and, you know, the running back may not pick up the linebacker who's blitzing. There are other times where Tannehill did have opportunities to throw the football, but he didn't. He held on to it for some reason. And then there's times where guys just simply aren't getting open. And, you know, when you have all three of those things happen consistently, that's where you're going to lead the league in sacks. And that's what's happening with the Titans offense. What you need to do as far as the offensive coordinator is concerned, and he's done it over the last couple of weeks, a little more bunch formation, get rub routes, stack receivers at the line of scrimmage, you know, allow these guys, you know, with those zero splits to have the DBs be forced to back up. So this way you're getting that quick separation, so it's a catch and throw. And that's something that Todd Downing is starting to do.
They've had a pretty stout schedule. They played the Seahawks, the Colts, who always play tough. And Arizona, who's the only unbeaten team in the league. So how have they fared against that upper echelon of competition?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think they fared okay. They're 3-2. The Cardinals game was just they were dominated in that game right from the start. And that's something, you know, Chandler Jones, five sacks on his own. So that just speaks for itself. The other games were just tough, hard-fought games. You know, even the Jaguars one, that was a tough game. The big issue, you know, in those games against the Jets and the Jaguars, is they let teams that shouldn't have been in the game stay in the game. And that's something that they can't do. You know, this week going against Buffalo, you absolutely have to get off to a quick start, because that Bills offense is so good. They strike quickly, and they will keep loading that scoreboard. So you definitely have to get off to a better start than they have in these last couple games.
There's a curious development on special teams with punter Brett Kern going on the COVID reserve list earlier this week. I know that punt coverage has been a little bit of an issue. They're last in the league in terms of yards allowed on that particular area of the team. Is Kern going to be back in time for Monday night? Is that the anticipation? And if not, how much does that kind of throw a wrench into the works of a unit that's already had a couple of struggles here and there, just based on the numbers anyway?
Yeah, Kern's going to be out a bit, and Johnny Townsend is the punter. That's who they called upon. He's been solid. You know, he shanked one. It was like a 12-yarder. Then he bounced back with a 60-yarder a couple weeks ago in his first game. So that's pretty much what they're going to have to go with. And, you know, when you have a guy that former defensive coordinator Dean Pease jokingly called him the defensive MVP, and Brett Kern the punter, you know, because of how he flips the field, when you take that away, that definitely makes it a lot tougher. And the thing with Kern that was so good is he had different ways of punting the football. He had a knuckler. He had, you know, the ability to pin it in each corner and those type of things, which, Steve, as you know, that helps you as a cover guy on the punt team. So that is something that's taken away, and it's been tough for them just as far as working with Townsend. But, you know, he's held his own, and they just have to do what they can, you know, to limit McKenzie this week, and we'll see how that pans out.
You've said that you think it's important for the Tennessee Titans to get off to a fast start because of the Bills' offense and their ability to score points. What do you think their defensive plan will be against the offense of the Bills? Certainly you'd love to have, you know, Josh Allen and company standing on the sidelines for most of the game, but when they do take the field, how do you think the Tennessee Titans will match up defensively? What will be their scheme?
Yeah, I think, you know, in talking to the defensive backs, you know, what they've said is plaster. That's really the main thing. And you have to do that against a guy like Josh Allen, because it's unique, because he's able to extend plays, and he's so big that even when he's in the pocket, guys are bouncing off of him. And when he does that, he has his eyes down the field, and he's gotten so much better as a deep ball passer. And you saw it last week where he extended the play, went off schedule, and Dawson Knox turned his route up the field, and it was a long touchdown, one of five touchdown passes that Allen has of 40 yards or more. So really it's about plastering up front. The guys are trying to keep him in the pocket. But, I mean, like I said, even within the pocket, he could make plays extending it and doing those things. So it's a really tall order going against a guy like Josh Allen, who I feel is, over the last couple of years, probably the most improved quarterback in the NFL.
So, Teron, what do we make of, you know, the draft choices? You know, they wisely invested in some defensive backs, Caleb Farley, Elijah Molden, who's a player I loved. He's just a flat-out football player. How have they been worked into playing time in the secondary? What's been the rotation like there? Because there are, you know, there is a veteran in Janoris Jenkins and Christian Fulton, who was a high draft choice just a year ago.
Yeah, well, Chris, you're right. Elijah Molden is just, he's a flat-out football player. He's a joy to watch, a joy to talk to. And you're seeing a transfer onto the field. He's beginning to get a lot more comfortable as a nickel guy. He had struggles against Seattle. But last week he had a forced fumble, you know, one of the early plays in the game, and it resulted in a touchdown. So the team is desperately in need of turnovers, and he helped establish one. So I think he's going to continue to play in that nickel spot, him as well as Chris Jackson. But as far as Caleb Farley is concerned, he didn't practice on Thursday. So that's something to be a little bit concerned about. You know, you want the rookie to be able to get out there and get his, you know, his ability to get into the flow of the game, you know, the flow of the game plan, and not practicing hurt him. And he actually played 22 snaps last week in place of Fulton, who also didn't practice. So that right corner position is going to be an interesting spot. You know, whoever the Bills line up out there, it's going to be one to watch, just because I'm not sure exactly who's going to play the position. If Fulton's going to be ready to go, if Farley's going to be ready to go. And if neither of those guys are ready, then it'll be Breon Borders. But, you know, getting back to the rookies themselves, Dylan Raiders, I mentioned him at the tackle position. He may get some reps, you know, pending injury. But, I mean, they haven't gotten much out of their draft picks, to be honest with you. Molden has played the most. Monty Rice, he's been kind of in and out of the lineup. He has a groin situation he's dealing with as well. So it's been tough sledding for this rookie class, and it's been that way for last year's rookie class as well, outside of Fulton.
So Tennessee sits at 3-2, and they're playing the NFC West this season. They got a stretch here in the next four games. They've got the Bills, then they've got Kansas City, then a division game with the Colts, who are going to be desperate to win football games, and then they've got the Rams. This next month could really make or break the season for the Titans. Is that the way you see it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And before the season even started, you know, looking at the schedule, I said that was the murderer's row, part of the schedule. And if they could survive that, they'll be okay. But, I mean, it's tough to survive back-to-back-to-back games like this. You know, the thing is, all of those teams that they're going against are very physical teams. So it's almost like one week will roll into the next one. And it's starting with this one against a very physical Bills defense, just a physical team overall, you know, offensively running that QB power and the things that they do.
Talking with ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter Teron Davenport. Last one I've got for you, Teron, is what do we make of their pass rush? Obviously, everybody got excited when they got Bud Dupree to kind of work as a bookend opposite Harold Landry. I know the numbers aren't speaking to sack production per se, and maybe it's a byproduct of maybe not getting enough down and distance opportunities on third down to really get after the quarterback. But what do you attribute, or what have you seen basically from this tandem through five games? Have they kind of found their way? Are they peaking? Where are these guys as a tandem?
Well, Harold Landry is playing the best football he's played yet. He has 4.5 sacks. He's right up there top three with the pressures that he's getting. So can't really say much about him. He's doing a really good job of just finishing. And you see him playing well against the run also. But on the opposite side, you know, Bud Dupree has been hurt. He's still distancing himself from that knee injury that he had just in December of last year. So it's kind of asking a lot to have him, you know, play as well as he did before the injury at this point. And he acknowledged that he kind of tried to go a little bit too early and pushed it a little bit and tried to fight through the pain when he shouldn't have. So he's still kind of up and down. Not sure if he's going to play this week. He didn't play the previous couple games. So that's obviously one to watch. But a guy who actually has stepped in his place is Ola Adeniyi. And he's He's primarily a special teams player, you know, for the Steelers. But the Titans signed him to do that same role, but he's played some outside backer. He has 2.5 sacks. He actually had a sack that should have been a safety against the Seahawks to really turn the momentum in overtime. So that's pretty much what you're getting up front. You know, in the middle, you have Jeffrey Simmons, who he's not getting as many sacks, but he's still causing the pressure. And one other guy that I definitely have to point out is Denico Autry, who is playing really well. You see him as a stand-up guy, you know, outside linebacker, but also as a you know, a five tech, he's playing there as well. So, you know, those are really the primary guys. They've been hit with injury. Derek Roberson was a guy they were expecting a lot from, but he's on IR. So it's been a difficult situation just as far as what they have available to them. I feel like they're making the best of it, but they do need to get more sack production in addition to impacting the quarterback.
One last one for me, Teron. You've been covering this team. You cover this team, you know, day on a daily basis. What's Mike Vrabel been saying a little bit about this team that may be different from years past, or what has been his point of emphasis for you guys in the media? What do you think he's thinking about these days that maybe he didn't know he was going to be thinking about, or maybe it's just more of the same? What about Mike Vrabel and his message?
Yeah, well, his message to the team this week has primarily been, you know, to get away from the stats, you know, because if you look at the stats, this Bills team is their top five in pretty much everything. So he's saying get away from the stats and let's look at, you know, the task at hand. As far as what his message or just anything different for him, I think this injury situation is a bit different. He's always said that football is a 100% injury sport, but things have really been piled up. I mean, they had 20-plus guys on the injury report last week. So I think that's something that's just kind of been a bit of a challenge for him. But it's the next man up mindset. And that's something that you know, he's preached since training camp when Julio Jones and A.J. Brown weren't able to participate. He told these receivers, next man up. And you saw guys like Marcus Johnson and Chester Rogers emerge from bubble roster guys to significant game rep guys. So that's really what it's been, man. Next man up. And that's been the focus for those guys.
Well, Teron, listen, thanks very much for the time. We appreciate it. Do your best to keep those sunny skies going out there. We want this Bills passing game to have the nice weather to operate in. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, from what I heard, it's not going to be as sunny this weekend. So, you know, if you guys come in early, make sure you bring your rain shoes and your raincoats and be ready for what may come ahead.
All right, fair enough. Thanks for the time, as always, Teron. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, that's ESPN NFL Nation Titans beat reporter Teron Davenport, always plugged into the scene down there. That's why we try to get him on the show anytime the Bills are facing the Titans, which will be the fourth time in the last 4 years.
Yeah, it's familiar.
Pretty crazy that you keep, you know, coming up against these teams seemingly every year. Chiefs, Titans, yeah. Just seems to be frequent AFC opponents. We have to break here, but when we come back, we hope to have Taron Johnson joining us here on the show. He of the 3-year contract extension signed just last Saturday before balling out in the win over the Kansas City Chiefs. Back in a moment here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
I just wanted to stamp myself in the NFL, and I feel like I've shown glimpses of it.
Ball comes out, it is intercepted.
He's just the ultimate competitor.
And me and Pope have been in it for a while, so add my name to that list.
He's a dog. I mean, he's a dog, pound for pound, just the best nickel in the league. You ain't even got to finish your sentence, but just the way he played today was incredible.
Listen, when you line up across from 2-4, it's going to be a long day for you.
And he brings it out, and he's still on the run. He may go all the way.
All right, that is just the opening to the Beyond Blue and Red latest edition featuring one Taron Johnson going the distance. And we bring in Taron Johnson now as part of our fresh off-the-field interviews, which are brought to you by Austin Air, the official clean air provider of the Buffalo Bills. Taron, first and foremost, congratulations on the contract extension. You signed it quietly over the weekend. I mean, we tried to pump it up on the website, you know, do our best over here. But how did that come together? Were you just kind of talking with your agent saying, hey, man, I know where I want to be. It's here in Buffalo. Let's get this done. Or did they kind of come to you?
I think it was a little bit of both.
you know, I mean, I definitely wanted to stay with the Bills, and Dean came to me and just said, we're going to start working on an extension. Hopefully we can get a deal done before the bye week. So just that being said, I talked to my agent, and he talked to me about the numbers, and it ended up being where I wanted it to be. And yeah, I'm just happy to be here, and I was happy to sign.
How happy and what kind of locker room was it when you all got back into the locker room in Kansas City? You had an hour-long rain delay. You came back in. You beat them by 18. You beat them by more than they beat you in the AFC Championship game. Describe what it felt like in the locker room last Sunday night.
Oh, amazing. I mean, one of the best experiences I felt in a minute. So it was just exciting. You know, it's always fun to get back at a team who beat us in the past, especially in a big game like the AFC Championship, and just being able to basically have that rematch and win on their home field is everything for our team.
I know, you know, last year in the AFC title game, you know, Coach Frazier had you guys moving around different coverage assignments through the course of the game, and you guys were trying to mix it up on Kelce and Hill, and it looked like you did some of that to some extent this past week again. What made you guys more effective, do you think, this time around, or help make you more effective in this performance than maybe the last performance when those guys leaked out on you a little bit?
I feel like our game plan was a little bit better. The coaches did a great job just learning from the teams that Kansas City has played and learning from our losses against them. Just our game planning and our D-line was definitely wreaking havoc back there. So just a combination of those things, and we ended up with a W.
What about moving forward? You turn your sights now on a Monday night game. It's got another primetime game, another night game. Those are always a little bit difficult during the day, kind of waiting around to get the game kicked off. Also, it's another team you guys play. You've played every year of your career, right? I mean, you guys know these guys. So what do you know that's, and we've talked about it, the Chiefs are a completely different animal than the Tennessee Titans. Yeah. How do things change for you guys this week?
We got to stop the run. You know, Derrick Henry, he's a force back there, but us just making sure that we're doing what we're supposed to do, our 111th. I feel like it's going to come down more about us and us doing our jobs more than them.
Taryn, I know you're not one that, you know, seeks the spotlight all that much. So how weird was it for you filming this Beyond Blue and Red piece that's on all our Bills social platforms now? I mean, they basically had you literally rewalk your 101-yard interception return. They, you know, some of the producers, Michelle and others, were joking that they had to slow you down because you were walking it too fast. And yeah, I mean, I know that's not what your career is. You know, your job is to play football, not look good on camera. But how was it kind of going through that maybe for the first time as the focal point of a piece?
It's a little awkward for me. Like you said, I don't really like too much of being the focal point, but you know, it came out very, very well. And the producers and everyone who made it did a very great job and represented the team well and myself. So it was just a good piece overall.
Yeah, and I know that, you know, when you think back about it, that's going to be a play that's going to kind of stick with you for your entire career. It was a kind of a historic play for the franchise in that it put you into the AFC Championship game. What are your thoughts? You look back on that. Certainly, you've got a lot of football left in you, but certainly that had to be a stamp of validation for you that, you know, you made a name for yourself and a place for yourself on this roster in this town with this franchise.
I mean, it was just – I mean, I'm just thankful that I had that opportunity, you know. Obviously, I couldn't have got into the end zone without my teammates, so I'm really just thankful for those guys to basically escort me into the end zone. And without them, it probably wouldn't have been a touchdown. So I'm just thankful for the opportunity, and hopefully I can make more plays like that in the future.
Taryn, I remember after that game, you're in the Zoom room post-game, and I asked you, did you think about taking a knee? And you were honest, and you said yes, because I kind of saw your knee flinch like you were going to take a knee. I was like, holy cow, I think he was thinking about taking a knee. And you confirmed that. You were honest. But the fact that you didn't, and you turned it into probably your most noteworthy play of your career, does that make you think differently now whenever you get an interception? Like, because it turned out so well, do you always think, I don't know if I'm ever going to take a knee again?
No, 100%. Anytime I get the ball in my hands, I'm trying to score a touchdown. And that's just the way it is. Yeah. That's just the way it is. So my next interception, I will be trying to score a touchdown.
Yeah.
Now, also, and I know I said this, and you know about this season, it seemed to me like you have been playing maybe at another level this season than you did at any point last season. I felt like during the first 3, 4, 5 game and fifth game as well of this season, you have been in the middle of a lot of plays. You had an interception called back in the Washington game, and the very next play you had a pass breakup. It just seems like you have really elevated yourself to a point where you're in the middle of it a lot. Does it feel that way to you, or is that just me catching sight of you, or what? Do you feel like this is a season where your game has taken another step?
I do. I definitely feel like I'm better this year than I was even towards the end of last year, you know. So I just want to focus on keep on getting better, you know, and hopefully I could keep making plays and making this helping make the team better.
So, Taren, I'm curious because I remember talking to you in the locker room your first and second year, and you're battling through that shoulder problem where you had to get surgery. And I remember talking to you after your first year, and you said, the biggest thing I learned is I have to get stronger, bigger and stronger. And you had a rehab to deal with the whole offseason to begin with. Now, you know, you're a young vet now, and it's clear that you are stronger, but how is your body composition different now here in year four than what it was as a rookie or even a second-year player coming off rehab?
I had actually lost, like, I can't remember, but I had lost, like, I want to say, like, 4% body fat.
Okay.
4% of my body fat that I've had in my second year in the NFL versus now. And, I mean, that's a huge credit to the guys in the weight room and our nutrition people. Just making sure I'm taking care of my body, you know, and that comes with lifting, that comes with eating right, and that comes with taking care of my body, even if I feel a little banged up.
Taren, enjoy it. Congratulations once again. We encourage everybody to go to the website and watch for the Blue and Red, Beyond Blue and Red. Congratulations on the new contract, and good luck this weekend in Tennessee.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
All right, Taren, thanks for the time. Appreciate it as always. Go get him on Monday night. All right, that's Taren Johnson. Joining us here as he is part of our fresh off-the-field interviews brought to you by Austin Air, the official clean air provider of the Buffalo Bills. I got to tell you, because going into the offseason, Steve, I was concerned. He was probably the top priority, at least for me, among the impending free agents on this roster. To have him locked up before Halloween, whew, that's one thing off the to-do list, a big one.
Slot corners are
in
hard.
This defense, yes. The slot corner, yeah. I mean,
well,
they have a gigantic.
I mean, it's a starting cornerback.
Yes.
You know, and he's – you think about it, and I know someday it's going to have to change because guys get long in the tooth and the guys get injured or whatever, but you need guys that can really play back there. You need athletes, yeah. Guys who are familiar with the system, guys who you trust. And the Bills have got them all. And Taren Johnson's a huge part of that. He's a starting corner in the NFL. And not only that, he's a slot corner, which is a totally different skill set than a lot of corners possess. They're hard to find. And he is really good at it. And kudos to the Bills for getting him locked up and getting another guy who's really helped them win a lot of games, getting him on the roster for the foreseeable future.
And if you watch the Beyond Blue and Red feature on him, that's up now on BuffaloBills.com and on all the Bills' social platforms, you'll hear some of his teammates say, playing that position is multifaceted. There are times where you got to cover like a slot guy, but there are times you got to play the run like a linebacker.
Right.
And there are a multitude of different responsibilities that position demands of the guy who lines up and plays it. And I thought it was a very astute move by the Bills to have one of their assistant coaches specifically coach the nickel corner position because it is that complex and multifaceted in this scheme. And Jimmy Salgado does a heck of a job. He's been instrumental in Taren Johnson's development, and we're kind of seeing the rewards of that on the field from him each and every week. As you mentioned, he's probably playing his best football right now. Right.
I think he is. I think he really got out of the gate fast this season as a slot corner. He's, you know, teams –
when you play slot corner, here's the thing. You can't hide. You're going to get the ball thrown at you. No matter how good you are, you're going to get opportunities to cover up and step in front of plays, because a lot of times when your team brings pressure, the ball has to come out quick, and it comes out quick to the tight end, quick to the slot receiver, and that's your guy. There's just no escaping being challenged at the slot receiver slot corner position. You're always going to get challenged, and you're going to get opportunities to play the ball. It's not like being a Tre'Davious White, where if you shut your outside guy down, you know, you maybe not, you'll see three targets the entire game.
Yeah.
You don't escape targets as a slot guy.
Break time for us here. When Steve and I come back, might be a little time for some NFL true false. Steve and I'll bring that to you next when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. This week's game sponsor is the BFLO Store, the official retailer of the Buffalo Bills. Josh Allen has just stepped to the podium after practice here today. So let's get the quarterback's thoughts on the upcoming game against the Titans on Monday Night Football.
But obviously last year things did not go your way. There were a lot of factors in that game. But when you look back at that and it felt like a lot didn't click, you know, what do you take from that now moving forward? I know it's a year later.
I mean, it's a week-to-week league, and you know, we understand, we've seen these guys the last few years, I think the last 4 years. So we're pretty familiar with each other. And ultimately, we got to go out there and execute a game plan. You know, they came out last year and they played better than we did. And there's no understating that fact. And, you know, going into an away game, a hostile environment, it's never easy. So we got to be ready for whatever they throw our way. And, you know, they're playing really well. You know, on defense especially, they got some dudes that can make some plays now. So, and we understand the type of offense that they have, and trying to limit, you know, them having the ball, because they're a really, really good football team, and we got to be ready for it.
I know you said it's just longer day in the hotel and you kind of just sit around and wait, but do you get any extra juice playing in like a primetime game, you know, on the big stage? It seems like, you know, you guys have stepped up on that stage the last couple of times.
Personally, I don't. You know, I just kind of, you know, try to live by never too high, never too low, and just try to keep the common ground somewhere. You know, we understand we're the only team or only game on the screen that day. It's Monday night. It's big time. And but at the end of the day, it's the same football, same game we've been playing for as long as we remember. And we got to go out there and play as such.
From last year, sticking your head, considering it was Tuesday night, stiff arm, just everything that went into that.
I mean, again, it's a week to week league, and every week's a different challenge. And you know, we understand that this is a team that's going to bring it. You know, they're extremely well coached, they're extremely disciplined. So we got to be prepared, like I said, for anything. And they're probably going to try some new wrinkles here or there. And every year they seem like they play us better. So we got to come out ready to go.
Josh, I know you always say that it's game plan specific, and whoever gets the ball is the guy that gets the ball. Have you gotten with Cole the last day or two? He's kind of had a frustrating stretch here of not being targeted the last two games. Have you shared any thoughts with him? Has he said anything to you? Can you just maybe give us a little insight?
Cole's a vet. He's been around this league for a long time. You know, he's a huge piece of our offense, and he understands some games we're going to need him more than others, and I think everybody on this team understands that. But he's ready to go at all times. You know, I've got no loss of faith or confidence in him, and I know he feels the same way. And he just wants to help this team win football games, and whatever the case may be for that, he's willing to do. But, you know, again, I got no doubt that he's going to continue to help us win games.
Last week, he only had 22 snaps, and you guys used Gillian and Sweeney more than we had, and even Kumaro and Isaiah got more reps. Is that just a factor of you're trying to play against the Chiefs team and you were throwing everything you could at them? Was that maybe part of that?
No, I mean, I think it was just game plan specific, just trying to get them to see different looks and feel different things. And who knows, we might continue to do that. We might go back to kind of our normal stuff. But, again, this is a team, and I think really our identity is execute a game plan. Whatever Coach Dable has in mind, whether it be, you know, 10 personnel or 21 purse or, you know, 22 personnel, whatever the case may be, we want to go out there and execute whatever play is being called at that given time. And You know, that's why I love the guys that we got on this team. We're willing to do whatever it takes to win a football game. No, that's not going to change.
When it came to the touchdown pass Sunday night, looks like, well, he got downfield and you gave him, it looks like Swanson kind of gave up thinking that the pass is on, the ball had already been thrown, but you scrambled out of the pocket. How surprised were you to see Dawson that wide open at that point?
I mean, it was man-to-man. They brought a safety down to try to, you know, play a little thief. And, you know, our guys know at any given time, at any given play, you can get the ball. You know, so it was a great job by Dawson, just keeping the, you know, keeping the play alive, finding space and running to it. You know, it's typically in scramble drills, you want to come back to the quarterback, but he saw Steph, I think it was Steph, in that area already, so we decided to take it the other way, and it worked out in our favor. So, but again, that's just the type of guys that we got, savvy, want to play, want to win. He made the right play, and just trying to get him the ball.
Second touchdown play. You go back to the Texans game where everybody went, you faked the ball towards Steph and Dawson was wide open. I mean, how valuable is having Dawson there now? And not that you want to use Steph as a decoy, but how valuable is Steph in that role? And then he can play off Dawson.
Well, in that sense. Defenses know where Steph's at all times. You know, you have to pay attention to him and. You know, I know he hasn't had a whole lot of production so far this year, and taking two guys and clearing it out for somebody else behind him, because he knows, you know, sometimes the roles are going to be reversed and he's going to have his opportunities. So, but again, it just kind of shows the selflessness of the guys that we got.
And if I may, just I was going to be my follow up question: when are defenses going to start focusing on Dawson? They should.
You know, he's. You know, an up-and-coming talent, and he's only going to get better. You know, he's becoming more confident in himself, and I've had, you know, a lot of confidence in him for a long time. And, you know, he's just one of those guys that's just kind of a unicorn. He's big, fast, strong, smart. You don't get those guys too often. But again, you know, whatever defenses do, it's my job just to try to execute a game plan and get it to the open guy. And, you know, our guys got open and made some plays last week, but this week's going to be a different challenge, and we're going to have to find ways to move the ball in this defense.
We talked a few weeks ago about you getting a rhythm early and how you do that. Last week, three designed runs on the opening series. Does sometimes you getting hit maybe early settle you down and maybe take away some of the jitters?
I think in the past that's kind of helped. I wouldn't say so much now. Typically, I like to get the ball out quick and let our guys make some plays. But, you know, whatever's called upon me to do is what I'm willing to do. And Coach Dable called up some good plays for us there, and worked out in our favor. So whether that's part of our offense moving forward, who knows? But again, it's just whatever the task at hand is.
You've taken such big strides, throwing the ball, accuracy, all those things. Does it still feel like your most natural thing sometimes is to take the ball down and kind of little backyard football or kind of take off with it?
Like I said, in different situations, I guess, you know, when I'm dropping back and I see a lane open, first thought is like, let's take it now, you know, and you never go broke taking a profit. But again, I get paid to get it to the other guys that get paid to make people miss in the end zone. So that's what I try to do.
What do you think Emmanuel has brought to your offense? And then how have you guys been able to get on the same page?
Well, other than energy and juice, you know, he brings knowledge. He's played in the league for a long time. He's a savvy vet. He knows his job. He studies hard. He runs his routes as hard as he can, in practice included. Just a guy that I got a lot of trust in. And, you know, he shows kind of the younger guys how to do it. And he's a great role model, and he's a great dude. And I love having him around. You know, we give each other a lot of crap throughout the day. I think he's the oldest guy on the team, and I let him know it every day I can. So, but he's been awesome to be around, and I'm super, super glad we were fortunate enough to grab him.
Last one for Josh. Talk so much about the hostile environment. What was it like with a full house? And what did you guys do so well this time?
I mean, it was such a good environment. You know, we really enjoy and thrive playing in those types of situations, and you know, it was a lot of fun. But you know, going into Tennessee again, it's going to be the same thing. A lot of loud fans. I know we travel well there pretty much. You know, every year we go there, but. You know, they're playing good football right now, so I expect to be on silent the entire game. And Again, it's going to be another dogfight, and we got to be prepared for it. Mingus.
Right. More jelly than peanut butter. 60.
More jelly than peanut butter? What? Mm. What? I am floored by that final comment, and it was very much in passing.
Well, here's the thing, too. There's a lot going on.
60-40 jelly to peanut butter? It's always got to be more peanut butter, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think in my pace. But here's the thing, too. And one of the things I can't believe we're talking about peanut butter.
I'm floored
before we get out of here. That here's the thing. My wife, last week, first day, and went Tuesday last this week, 3 days ago, I came in and had two peanut butter and jelly sandwiches as a precursor to this conversation.
Okay.
My wife made them. Not only do you have to have the right ratio of peanut butter and jelly, but she made them my sandwiches like she used to make our kids' sandwiches for school.
Would you get triangle cuts?
No.
Oh.
Real thin peanut butter, a little thin, you know. The sandwich is about what's in the sandwich, not the bread.
I agree.
So you got to have enough peanut butter and enough jelly, both, to make it a sandwich and not just, you know, bread with something smeared on it.
Yeah, look, it was like a stuck together door flap. It's basically what you were eating for lunch.
That is unacceptable.
Yeah. I'm completely the other way. I'm 70-30 peanut butter to jelly.
No, I got to have some jelly.
If you have that much jelly, you're going to have a dish rag for a sandwich if you're not eating it right away.
Well, eat it right away then.
If you're picking, no, I'm saying you pack your lunch in the morning and you go 60% jelly, that other side of the sandwich is going to be a dish rag. It's going to soak up all the gelatinous
that really doesn't
mess
bother.
That you
doesn't
got
bother
in there.
Me that much, though. So it's not about the taste for you. It's about the getting.
Well,
getting the bread.
I want to be able to taste the jelly.
Because here's what you.
But
do.
I don't want it to overpower the sandwich.
Yeah, I am.
So
yeah,
I
I'm with you.
I like 70-30. I mean, 65-35 is the farthest.
I'm not saying 50-50.
60-40 is aggressive. Jelly to peanut butter?
Yeah,
60-40, that's aggressive.
Yeah, 60-40 peanut butter to jelly is what I like.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I get
Josh
it.
Josh is going the other
and
way.
And I'm not. I'm with you. It's a great sandwich, no matter what's on it, no matter what kind of jelly. But I'm a red jelly guy more than a grape
really?
Jelly. Yeah, I'm a strawberry, raspberry, that kind of thing.
I am grape jelly 100
grape jelly's
times
good.
Out of 100.
I don't mind grape jelly at all, but I like the red jellies better.
Do
the,
you?
Raspberries and the strawberries and the cherries.
I can venture into that territory.
Yeah, it's good stuff. But anyway, it's an iconic meal, and it's almost
it's about as American as apple
most,
pie.
Right, I think so too. Most of us kind of make your own, right? I mean,
oh yeah,
I get kids.
If you want
make,
it
the
done
moms
right.
make it. The moms make it right. Right, if you want it done right, that's exactly my point.
It is a
so,
matter of preference.
Do not complain about a sandwich that you made.
Yeah. Some interesting comments from Josh there, more importantly than the peanut butter and jelly.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot about it. He spoke, didn't he?
There were a lot of questions about Beasley's lack of usage within the scope of the offense. I think he only got 22 snaps last week, one reception. I think he only got targeted twice. Didn't even go out there on a couple of third downs. Josh seemed to indicate it was game plan related and that they were trying to throw some different things at the Chiefs.
That's what echoed through in McDermott's comments right after the game as well, game plan.
So it wouldn't surprise me at all if, you know, the very next game he's – I mean, we shouldn't forget, against Washington he had 11 receptions.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's just a matter of game plan specific stuff, I think, more than anything else. And Brian Daboll, if he believes that going with other resources – to win a football game is going to be more effective. He's going to do that, and he trusts that the veterans and other players on this team that have roles will understand that it is game plan specific. It has nothing to do with their abilities as a player.
I think you can tip your hat to the roster, too, because most of the guys, Steph Diggs, they have been selfless in their words and what they say about each other. They have noticed it about each other, about how the room is unselfish and about how everybody is for each other. And that's a great atmosphere to be a part of. So I'm sure that the coaches have been harping on that and cultivating that kind of atmosphere. And it comes from the best players because guys like, you know, Steph Diggs and Josh and Cole Beasley and Emmanuel Sanders and all these guys, you know, they're not going to be in the middle of it all the time. And how they handle it is really important to the guys who are down the roster. And so far it's been stellar.
All right. We're done for today, but we'll be back tomorrow with the triumphant return of Tasker's teammates, Greg Cosell, and some player sound as well. You don't want to miss it. We'll be jam-packed for you tomorrow. See you then.